This project, Under God's Stories from Soho Road, grew from my educational and social background, which are crucial to what the understanding of what I call my vision. What kinds of knowledge or understanding are contained in my seeing and translating of the world and my approach in undertaking this project. I grew up as the daughter of two Anglican priests in Birmingham, one of the UK's most culturally diverse cities, which I'm sure you all know, where over 90 different nationalities now live. At Brighton University, I gained a BA in documentary photography and then moved to Italy to complete a scholarship at a research and communication department for young artists and journalists. During these experiences, I became aware of the particularity of my upbringing. I developed an interest in the growth of multi-faith communities in European inner-city contexts and the complex issues involved, such as immigration, secularism, and religious revival. Between 2008 and 2009, I investigated urban faith on the two-mile stretch of Soho Road in Birmingham. As researcher, both beside and behind the lens, I intimately traced the quotidien spiritual practices, both formal and domestic, that pay out on the Swan Street, the site of 30 religious centres for denominations from throughout the world. I lived with and visited the different religious communities, including Jamaican Rastafarians, the Jesus Army Evangelical Christians, Sikhs, Hare Krishnas, and Thai Buddhists. I think the words of a South Asian Anglican woman priest sum it up very well. On Soho Road, people are conscious of their faith rather than where they came from. People used to say, "Oh, I'm from Bangladesh, Pakistan, West Indies, or Poland." Now people say, "I'm a Muslim, I'm a Sikh, I'm a Baptist, I'm a Catholic, this is my identity." The Sikhs are the most predominant and established community on Soho Road. The quantity and variety of Sikh Gurdwaras reflect not only the many different religions represented along this two-mile stretch, but also the variation of practice and religious understanding within each community. The diverse buildings were live with sounds and smells 24 hours a day, and clearly for many of the community, the Gurdwara was as homely as home. The army of Sikh ladies particularly impressed me. They would be present throughout the night as they kneaded and rolled chapati upon chapati and chanted Wahguru. When I visited a Sikh friend, I found her also chanting alone in her kitchen as she cooked for her family. On one occasion, I entered another Gurdwara for the first time, and 20 minutes later, I was sitting on a rug with a visiting holy man from India in the very English-style Gurdwara garden. We ate oranges dipped in salt and discussed the extreme length and significance of his dreadlocks, or what I call dreadlocks, long, plaited hair, whilst looking over the fence at Soho Road Little Supermarket. Within the Buddhist faith, also, there were different temples for the Thai Buddhist community, Sri Lankan Buddhists, Indian Buddhists, and Vietnamese Buddhists. It is impossible to escape faith on Soho Road. It is in every shop, in the items they sell, or the images of Mecca or Haile Selassie hanging in the different hairdressers. I encountered individual Buddhist monks, Catholic nuns, and Protestant priests who would go from one faith building to another, fascinated, like me, by the different communities' activities and taking the opportunity to pray where they would go unrecognized. Fieldwork was not always easy. For example, when I stayed with the Hare Krishnas in minus temperatures in a small terraced house temple with no heating. On Christmas Day, I received text messages from a Buddhist monk, a Muslim teenager, and a Sikh man wishing me Happy Christmas. My photographs on Soho Road developed through collaboration between my subjects and myself as image maker, to the extent that which I sought their opinions on how they wished to be represented, and allowed them to intervene in positioning themselves. I took fewer photographs as the project developed and recognised that to gain the most expressive, revealing and truthful images, I should spend the majority of my time engaging through conversation or observation of my subjects and environments. After an analysis and developing an understanding, I would then often see the moment to capture. Although I rarely sought my subjects' opinions on the importance of that moment, I made my own judgments based on gathered knowledge in the shape of the project. I always carried a camera, tripod, an audio recorder, notebook, diary, phone, and a headscarf that could be worn in many different religious buildings. If I had them with me all the time, I felt the pressure of the task at hand. To give my subjects a voice within the work, I collected many quotes and made sound recordings. It is clear to me that my subjects can tell the audience much more about their own lives than I can ever pretend to in my images. I never overly planned my days, although I spent a great deal of time arranging meetings according to others' schedules, which more than often than not fell through. My days were planned according to the best light in different locations at different times, and then deciding whether to go to the Vietnamese Catholic christening or the Sri Lankan Buddhist festive celebration, although no day ever exactly followed its plan. On reflection, it would perhaps have been more energy and time effective to focus on one community at a time. However, the ongoing calendar of events and happenings in each community meant that I had to maintain my knowledge and relationships with them over a sustained period of time. I discovered that the disorientation and confusion I felt could be harnessed creatively, enabling me to regain some sense of normalcy amidst the steady flux of alien experiences. I realised I could not separate myself from my own familiar world completely and keep an important evaluative distance, but that I had to submit myself to the experience of disorientation, vulnerability and ignorance, and in a lit sense, learn to see again through others' eyes. I do not intend to depict people's spirituality, which I do not feel is possible to reveal. It is something so personal. I wanted to know what the people on the street believe their religion to be, rather than what is prescribed by the religious leaders and texts, because faiths are interpreted differently depending on time, place, and person. Over time, I realised the questions that mattered to the project and developed a confident analytical narrative voice. I acquired a new toolkit and learned to avoid overtly intentional descriptive imagery. Consequently, the majority of the photographs in the final edit were taken in the last few months in the field. I empathised with Edward Weston, who said that his photographs involve learning to see his subject matter in terms of the capacity of his tools and processes so that he can instantaneously translate the elements and values in a scene before him into the photograph he wants to make. My approach was founded on respect and fascination, respect for my subjects and for the world in which they live. I had been the only white girl in my own nursery class. I have memories of eating Indian curry at friends' birthday parties and attending Sikh festivals in the local park. I grew up within a religious community, but do not attach myself to one religion. I feel this offers me a unique perspective to study the faith communities intimately. As the daughter of two priests, living with people whose religion is fundamental to every aspect of their life, staying in a Catholic convent or a Hare Krishna temple, and going on road trips with the Rastafarians, did not seem as extreme or exotic as it may have to others. I entered the life of Soho Road as a young woman, and interestingly, I found I was seen as a neutral person with no agenda in an area where there were almost no white British people. I was constantly aware of my own personal sensibilities and preconceptions as a British-born Christian, and how they were reflected onto the subject and method I pursued. Increasingly, I was conscious that my strategy for exploring the world embodied not just ideas, but also beliefs about reality, gender, religion, the nature of subjectivity, and the status of my subject matter in the wider realm. My subjects frequently challenged what right I had to document and reveal the intimacy of their lives and beliefs. I felt I morally justified and negotiated this right through a more collaborative approach to my image-making, and gaining as deep an understanding as possible of my subjects and their environments before catching them on film. In addition, I ask people to take images of myself to see how they perceive me. I offer people services in return for their hospitality, for example, driving the Thai Buddhist monks to the wholesale market at 5 a.m, as their spiritual status means they cannot drive, or babysitting for a Muslim family. I agree with Elder's description of the personal as well as the intellectual rewards that come from relocating the daily work into a shared space where boundaries between myself as photographer and subject as student and stranger dissolve and become permeable. Using digital camera equipment enabled me to share the results and offer my subjects copies of their images quickly and easily. This became crucial in building trust and sustaining relationships and access. Photography, therefore, became the currency of our exchange. I took steps to make people understand what I was doing. It would seem more ethically right to give the same description to each subject. However, I soon discovered that every individual took a completely different understanding of my explanation, and it often required tailoring on the spot, even before a proper introduction. I therefore became quick at judging and interpreting people and their responses from merely their visual appearance, environment, and body language. My misjudgments and mistakes revealed my own stereotyping, which became highly useful in the editing work of the work. Can I just check how we have time? I did not carry consent forms, as I do, as not to obscure my relationships and lead to misconceptions of my intentions and any effective analysis. I do not attach a huge ethical importance to consent forms in my practice. Although a person may sign one day, over time people's ideas on how they want to be viewed or not viewed at all changes. Despite the fact I acquired signed consent at a later date, I would not choose to use the images for all the uses that I had permission for, out of my understanding of the subjects and how they wish to be represented. Recently, La Repubblica magazine in Italy decided to publish some of the images, and an Italian journalist, who was to go to Soho Road and write the accompanying piece, asked for my contacts in the area. I refused to give them and sent a carefully drawn-up project description and the quotes I collected. Photographs illuminate an effect of reality, not reality itself. Although my photographs are grounded in the subject's accounts and social and religious practices, the images reflect my own embodied experience. Acknowledging this, I sought to communicate about culture, people's lives, experiences and beliefs, not at the level of surface description, but as a visual metaphor which bridges that space between the visible and the invisible, which communicates not through the realistic paradigm, but through lyrical expressiveness. The visual engages the viewer empathetically, enabling them to find their own place within the context of the photographs and experience a sense of being there. In surrendering himself to this experience, the viewer can move beyond the barriers of language or culture to grasp a universal humanism. For me, photography yields the desirability of not comprehending everything. Instead of imposing a single meaning held by context or caption, such work leaves open the different levels of interpretation. I see religion has a multiplicity of voicings and readings and appreciate the way that the image reflects this. I know that no matter the reading I try to give to my work and the intentions I carefully try to maintain, each time an individual sees the work, they will bring a new meaning to it. And furthermore, perceptions of my work in 20 years will bring new meanings. I see photography as not about photographing per se, but about my engagement with subjects and the potentiality of the medium to question, arouse curiosity, tell in different voices, and see through different eyes from beyond. At a time when religion breeds unnecessary fear through misunderstanding, in my photographs I aim to reveal the beauty religion can bring to everyday inner city life and pose questions about wider complex issues in contemporary urban experience. I hope the results of my visual enterprise on Soho Road may constitute important documents of culture whose legitimacy is drawn from the fact that I, as creator, and am attempting to communicate values and negotiated realities which are integral to human experience and consciousness. The Undergods, as we mentioned earlier, photographs and installation of quotes and objects I collected from around the Soho Road is currently on show at Wolverhampton Art Gallery until February 2011. And I'd like to invite you all to the launch of the show on the 8th of December at 7 p.m. And alongside the show, I also ran a workshop with young people from the local area going around different religious buildings, and their photographs from these buildings are also on show in a different part of the gallery. And the exhibition will go on to London in March 2011 with further outreach projects. And there'll be a book published at this time as well. So I hope maybe a few of you might be able to come to the exhibition. Oh, Thank you.